It's a hugely significant meeting. It's also an intensely dramatic meeting. You have the situation here, the angel leaves Mary, and on top of all her own amazing news, he tells her, behold, your kinswoman Elizabeth, in her old age, has also conceived a son. And this is the 6th month with her who is called barren, for with God nothing will be impossible. So suddenly you're plunged back into the beginning of the Old Testament, where you have another elderly woman, Sarah, conceiving in her old age. When Sarah laughs disbelievingly and says, shall I indeed bear a child now that I'm old? The Lord in return says to Abraham, is anything too hard for the Lord? But you've Mary there. She's been told that she's about to conceive this child, and now she's been told that her postmenopausal cousin is pregnant. So it's little wonder that she, in Luke's words, arose and went with haste into the hill country to see Elizabeth. With Elizabeth, after all, lay potential corroboration of Mary's own astounding news, and more especially and very humanly, somebody to talk it over with, somebody who has herself experienced an unbending of the laws of nature. Now, the journey to Elizabeth, we're told, would have taken about 4 days, so Mary probably travelled in convoy for safety, but however many people that were there, you can imagine that she was very isolated in her thoughts, as nobody would have been before or since. She must have been in a tumult. And then she comes to Elizabeth's threshold. She's probably thinking, could I have imagined all of this? Did she doubt her recollection of the events? She's standing at the threshold, her heart must be pounding, and she calls out, Elizabeth. Then comes the extraordinary response. Blessed are you among women. Blessed is the fruit of your womb. And why is this granted to me that the mother of my Lord should come to me? Elizabeth says. And almost as an afterthought, she says, and blessed is she who believed that what was told to her would happen. Now, we know that Elizabeth and Mary, they didn't actually see each other at this point, because Elizabeth then goes on to say, behold, as soon as the sound of your greeting reached my ears. And at this point, she would have come into view. And at this point, as she completes her sentence and says, when the voice of your greeting came to my ears, the infant in my womb leaped for joy. At this moment, she's standing in front of Mary. She's clearly heavily pregnant. And Mary is looking at her, and Mary knows this is it. This is the angel spoke the truth about Elizabeth. Presumably the angel has also spoken the truth about her. Elizabeth herself, of course, knows that her own son is destined for greatness as the forerunner of the Messiah. She's got the words of the prophet Malachi to inform her about this. The last words that God utters to his people through the Old Testament is in this rather gloomy book of Malachi, but it does end on the hopeful note. Behold, I will send you the new Elijah before the great and terrible day of the Lord comes, and he will turn the hearts of fathers to their children and the hearts of children to their fathers. And now the air is alive with prophecy becoming fulfillment. So what an intensely dramatic moment for Mary at this point. If there had been the faintest doubt in her mind, and she wouldn't have been human had there not been, it has now vanished, and her destiny is confirmed by the view of her heavily pregnant cousin. And what is her response? Her response is the Magnificat, a ringing, joyful, exuberant yes from Mary to God. Now, then another Old Testament lady comes on the scene as another ghostly character, if you like, because the Magnificat very strongly evokes the joyful song of Hannah in the first book of Samuel, and another Old Testament woman who had to wait a long time for a child. And it's a very appropriate evocation, because the child whose birth that Hannah was celebrating was the birth of Samuel, of course, the last of the judges, Samuel who would anoint David and establish his kingship. And Mary's son is about to inherit that kingship now, transforming it into an everlasting reign.
I mean, it really is an amazing scene to try and imagine all that happening, isn't it? And both of them maybe being aware of the prophecy being fulfilled as they stood there facing each other.
It's a profoundly moving scene. I mean, there they stand. They're probably locked in a close embrace, probably tears of joy running down their faces. Each woman conscious of her remarkable destiny. Each woman filled with expectation. And then, as I say, behind you have Abraham and Sarah evoked in the background, laughing disbelievingly at the good news God brought to them of the birth of their son Isaac, the only son who would be offered as a sacrifice and the person with whom God established his first covenant with his people. You have Hannah jubilant at the birth of Samuel, the prophet who's going to anoint the great King David. And prophecy, as I said, is becoming revelation, because this is a meeting now not of two people, but four people. You have Mary and Elizabeth, and of course you have John the Baptist and Jesus, the forerunner and the promised one, physically present, each in the womb of his mother. So here at a fixed point in time and place, a young Galilean girl is carrying within her one who's described in the book of Revelation as the person who is, who was, and who is to come. So it's a remarkable moment in time. As we stand on Elizabeth's threshold, it's the beginning of the New Testament covenant of God with his people.